Jenkins, the director of the Port Famous Art Gallery. Today his talk is going to be about somebody whose name we should know in Hawke's Bay, but I had never heard of him until I started my Durart research. And then I got very interested because Joseph Annabelle was related to the family that built Durart House. He was the uncle by marriage of Hannah Chambers McLean. Her mother's sister was married to Joseph Annabelle, so there's a connection there with Durart, and we always like to establish that. All right, I'll pass you over to Douglas. Thank you very much, Douglas.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you for this invitation. I'm going to say that part of the ploy of this was to lure us and Annabelle into the same room. And I think I've done that. Quick show of hands, Annabelle relatives. Excellent. And I think one of the things is that really I'm here as an art historian rather than as a family genealogist. So the Annabelle family is actually really quite well traced. It's quite an interesting and complicated family that does connect into Hawke's Bay in a lot of ways. But that's part of what I'm talking about, but it's not entirely what I'm talking about. I want to acknowledge that what we know about Annabelle and even what the possibilities of what we plan to do with Annabelle are based on this book here, Joseph Annabelle by Lynn Annabelle. There's going to be, in my talk, a little inherent criticism of this book, particularly the terrible quality of the reproduction. But I also might point out this book was written in 1982, and it really is quite a pioneering work of colonial art history. So although we might be a bit mean about it 30 years later, or I might be, it's actually a wonderful little book, so there's a contradiction to start with. And also the second contradiction is that really the search for Joseph Annabelle isn't very hard or very complicated, because there he is. There's only a few miles, not very far away at all, and they have a little cemetery in a very, very large, very impressive plot occupied by his wife. So, end of book. What I suppose I'm more interested in doing is trying to trace Joseph Annabelle's works by this artist and getting an understanding of why we should be interested in Annabelle. And not only why people in Hawke's Bay should be interested, but why the country should be interested as a whole, because I think he's a very important. Joseph Annabelle was born in Mansfield, Nottingham in 1815. It's a slightly later image, of course. He maintains a peripheral presence through the records in the town of Derby before marrying Mary Chambers there in 1839. Derby was not a town unknown for art, and of course the most famous son of Derby is the famous painter whose name was actually Joseph Wright of Derby, to differentiate him from other Joseph Wright. This is a generation before Annabelle, but Joseph Wright is a very well-known painter. This is called Cottage on Fire at Night. He was very, very good at this sort of apocalyptic nighttime gloom, and he went on later to paint early paintings of the Industrial Revolution with sort of fiery furnaces, suggesting this sort of notion of hell emerging on a bucolic landscape. He's also very famous for a painting that many of us would have grown up with, especially if we had, like I did, Arthur Mead's Children's Encyclopedia, which is the painting of the bird inside a suction pump, with a whole lot of doctors sucking the air out of the pump, and of course proving that he needed air to breathe and killing off the poor bird. But it's one of those great early 19th century narrative paintings that you can read a different sort of doom and gloom into. So the fact that Annabelle grew up in Derby as a young man doesn't mean he was disconnected from the art world. However, there's little evidence of any, well, there's little real detail of any art training that Annabelle might have received in his early years. His biography by Lynn Annabelle simply states that Joseph took formal art lessons, and this is based primarily on surviving evidence of paintings of sculpture that might have been part of formal lessons, and right through until World War II, drawing from casts was a popular way of teaching students to model on classical form and was considered more proper than life modeling. As I said, he married Mary Chambers in 1839. The Chambers were a Quaker family, and it's highly unlikely that they would have been much impressed by their daughter marrying a young artist of no particular future. But interestingly, it turns out that Joseph was most likely also a blacksmith. But this is interesting, the notion of blacksmith artist. They seem to us to be sort of two contradictions, really, although both of them are craft forms. In 1852, Joseph and Mary Chambers and their two children decided to leave Melbourne on board the ship Chalmers. This is not the Chalmers, but this is a contemporary immigrant ship heading for Melbourne. And of course in the 1850s, lots of people were heading to Melbourne for the Victorian gold rush. Annabel luckily kept quite a detailed shipboard diary. And this is where we really get to understand Joseph Annabel the blacksmith, because he is making small water filters out of metal and selling them to other people on the ship. And then he realised that after a while he was teaching people on the ship to make these water filters. So when he arrives in Melbourne, he signs the passenger list as Joseph Annabel the blacksmith. However, we get another side of Joseph on board the ship, because in his diary he keeps a little record. And it says, £2.12 and 6 for Mr. Birch's portrait, £2.12 and 6 for Mr. Potter's portrait, £2.12 and 6 for Mr. Longtrip, for Mrs. Poyser's portrait, and the same sum for Mr. Taylor's portrait. Indeed, £2.12 and 6 seems to be sum paid out for the Meskins and the Meskers, and Mr. Roberts and the Master Roberts. So all in all, a healthy sum was made. And that Annabel was entrepreneurial is also recorded alongside his diary, because clearly he brought on board a good supply of liquor, which he was also selling to them. I don't know if he had to get his sippers drunk before they were selling on board, but he was clearly some sort of entrepreneurial character. And what we know from that is that there are at least 6 to 8 Annabel portraits that must exist or possibly exist somewhere. Joseph Annabel arrived there in 1852, as I said, signed on the passenger list as a blacksmith. His period in Melbourne is something of a mystery, but he does record in his diary, this is the 10th town to the south of Melbourne. Melbourne was growing so fast that it couldn't accommodate everyone. I'll just read a little bit from his diary. We had to pay £3.12 to get to the tent ground with our luggage. We could not get a house, and we lived in the tent for several weeks. I got in a few days a house painting, for which I had £4 per week. I imagine that's painting houses, not pictures of houses. This seems a good sum, but things are very expensive here. You may pay £1 a week for an empty room made of wood, about as good as Mr. Morley's stables. Cabbage costs 1 shilling and 6 pence each, peas 1 shilling per quart in their husks, potatoes 6 pence per pound, onions 10 pence per pound, fresh butter 3 shillings a pound. After we had been in at the tent for a few weeks, I was taken poorly. We took a room for which we had to pay 15 shillings a week, and this was only wood. But I have good health now, and the rest of us are well, and the children exceedingly well. They're all eating like thrashers now. I am making filters at £4, 10 shillings a week now, but I intend to get into building houses if my filters do not sell. It's really unclear what Annabel got up to in Australia. It's fairly clear that he travelled around, probably, I suspect, not so much in prospecting for gold, but making money from the peripheral world of the gold rush. He seems to, at this point, have stayed away from any of the organised art societies or art events of the day. There's no record of him having exhibited paintings in Melbourne that we've yet been able to discover. However, it wasn't working out for him, and in 1860 he and his wife, with now two additional children, headed for New Zealand, arriving in Napier in 1860. Napier was an obvious place for the family to come, Mary's brother, John Chambers, having established himself very securely in Hawke's Bay. However, for an artist, Hawke's Bay probably held little promise, and particularly for an artist like Joseph Annabel. Where Annabel is important to Hawke's Bay is his claim, or the claim I'm going to make for him, to be Hawke's Bay's first resident artist. Artists might have travelled through, although it should be said that Hawke's Bay remains relatively free from the map of New Zealand's early painters. And also amateur sketches were quite well known. Eloise Taylor at the museum, down there in the front row, has done excellent work on Edward Lyndon. His special claim is to be Napier's first accountant. I don't know if that's quite as grand as being Napier's first. But unlike most contemporary accountants, he was an avid artist and sketcher. And this is a very lovely little drawing of Belquitter House on Napier Hill from, I think, 1871. But he was an accountant and land dealer, and really a lot of these images were really a way of selling property. So they're kind of the equivalent of the real estate agent's billboard. Edward Lyndon had arrived in Napier a couple of years before Annabel on the little steamer Wonga Wonga, which is, again, something that Annalise had written about on the Napier Athenaeum website in June 1858. And pretty soon after that, we encountered Vinden's own pencil and sketches of a very, very early settlement. So this is this tiny little settlement of Napier in 1858, and he's actually detailed along the bottom the names of the houses. Now, that drawing gets shushed up for promotional purposes, because remember we're trying to sell this place as somebody might want to come and stay. But Napier's not large, so this is the Napier to which Annabelle arrives. And so you've got this painter who specialises in portraiture arriving to a town of this size. Now what it says along the bottom there is the names of each building. William Colenso, that's the little house up on the top of the hill since demolished. The Registered Deeds Office, Harris House, Tiffin House, the Herald Offices, J. Sanderson, Seeley, Reverend Marshall, the Land Office, Napier 1861. Some of those names can come up again. So this is, in essence, a place with no painter. In the Victorian world, a real artist, Lindau would not arrive until 1881, and Joseph Gaunt and Jamie Perrott, who were both resident Gaunt in Hastings and Perrott in Napier, didn't arrive until the 1890s. And again, both the lives of Perrott and Gaunt in Hawke's Bay are on the Napier Athenaeum website for anyone who wants to have a look. So this is no place for a painter. A real painter works in oils. So you've got Joseph Annabelle as our first kind of real painter, and he's living here, he's not just travelling through. If you look at people like Perrott, what they would do is, they kind of ran a bit of a scheme really. They would arrive in Napier or Hastings, and they would announce that this was the most beautiful place that as artists they were going to come here and live. And so everyone would go, oh, this is amazing, with this major, major painter coming to live here, aren't we fantastic? They would put together a first big exhibition and everyone would buy everything, and then they go, oh, look, sorry, not to come and stay up. And then they move to Gisborne and they go, oh, Gisborne's the most beautiful place in the world. But Annabelle, the rest of his life is spent, so he becomes a resident painter. Okay, so he's arrived, but first of all, before I talk about his painting, we need to settle him in a bit. Perhaps, obviously, he took up residence with the family at Tiamata Station with Mary's brother John. He worked on a number of farms around the region, probably as a blacksmith or general farmhand. Before building a house in an area on the Tukituki, still called Undercliff, after that house, which seems to have been destroyed by a fire or a flood, it's basically the book allows you to take your pick. And then the family moved to Oakland and Havelock North, which is the home of the Boyle family, into whom their eldest daughter had married. And Joseph Annabelle actually spends the rest of his life until he dies in the 1890s at Oakland. Annabelle's Tiffin House in the Hawke's Bay Museum and Art Gallery collection is his major work, at least so far. It's certainly the work that drew my attention to the artist, and it is his most widely published work, although I've got to say at this extent that's not saying a great deal. It appears in two books, but one of those is a very good book on the history of New Zealand garden by Christopher Johnson through the eyes of painters, and it's considered a very interesting work in terms of the early colonial garden. This is the home of Henry Tiffin, built in Napier in the 1850s, and singled out in Linda's drawings as one of the key buildings of the new settlement. This painting is unusual, and it hints at Annabelle's special status as a resident painter rather than an adventurer or a salesman. This is a portrait of domestic harmony, designed to be treasured by the Tiffin family. And compared to Linden's works, which encourages us to come and build alongside this house, in a speculative way, this one concentrates on domesticity and particularly notion of garden and garden activity. The house remained in Napier until the 1950s and was pulled down. It's now where Tiffin Park is, behind the Municipal Theatre. This is a lovely work, and one of the first things that lets us know really fantastic detail, this wild speculative, this wonderful colour. But we do know about this painting, and that Annabelle worked for photographs. This is the photograph in which the work is based in the gallery collection. Yeah, I think it's really important that we don't disparage Victorian painters that used photography on which to base their works. It was an incredibly important tool, and we're often, I think, quite hard on painters that used photography as a tool, and a lot of painters do, but we don't always have the photograph to prove it. It doesn't make Annabelle less of a painter. Tiffin House is still a pretty spectacular piece of work. We got a later photograph of the same house, the same people playing croquet on the lawn, but the yucca died. We see this unusual arrangement of domesticity against a background of family activity and other works. That's, as Pam said, a blurry, out-focused photograph of an A. Joseph Annabelle is one of those supremely annoying painters who really signed his works. So most of Annabelle's are unsigned, we need to attribute them. but this is a rare appearance of the AJ signature initials. Bill, do not bring me paintings that have AJ's written on it, just because you think they're Joseph Annabelle. So this was really quite common. It's one thing that we kind of don't understand because we live in this ego-driven world of the contemporary painter, but Victorian painters often thought that modesty was a virtue, and if you're the only painter in town, why would you sign your paintings? Because everyone knows who did them. It's just 150 years later it becomes a problem. This is called Elizabeth, Anne and Horse, and it's believed to be painted at Risington, where Joseph Annabelle worked. Now, these are the reproductions from the book, and one of the things I'm very keen is to find where these works now lie. This is a lovely little work, and most unusual in New Zealand painting. And it's got this lovely suggestion of this sort of house and gate and background, and it's a little bit more, and it's a lovely juxtaposition between a woman and a horse and a little dog. This is an early work that was painted in England, and this is called Mary in England, so it's obviously painted before 1852, and it's a little bit hard to see, but it's a little house in the background, and again, these children and animal combinations are very popular with Annabelle, what we can tell, and this lovely one, a child and two dogs in front of a house. This is called Mame and the Boyle Homestead, and that's the Boyle family house, which I believe no longer exists in the background. There's something really interesting about these works. There's something not quite right about these works in terms of their scale. There's a certain naivety about them that suggests to me that Annabelle didn't have a lot of formal training, but there's also something deeply engaging about them, very, very charming about them. Not everyone in the time was comfortable with them. This is probably two Annabelle grandchildren on the banks of the Waikato River. Joseph's oldest son, Joseph Annabelle II, Jr., became a very important surveyor and ended up in Maunganui. So a lot of the Annabelle family ended up in Maunganui, descended from that line. And obviously Joseph, this is probably that Joseph's grandchild. But this exhibited in Maunganui in the 1880s, and this is quite unusual because Annabelle didn't seem to exhibit a lot. But one art critic of the day was rather perplexed by this work, and he wrote, "There is a singular picture of the exhibition, which owing perhaps to the technical and almost repulsive nature of the subject, has hitherto escaped attention. It seems to have puzzled the compilers of the catalogue, for although numbered, number 74, and stated to be the property of a Mr. Joseph Annabelle, it bears no name whatsoever. A medical man, however, will at once see what it is meant for. Two children and a large dog, every one of the three suffering from advanced hydrocephalitis or dropsy of the brain, and standing on the brink of a lake. And although flowers and playthings lie at the feet of the poor suffering children, is evidence from the pain depicted upon their countenance that their thoughts run to suicide." Medical subjects, as a rule, are to be appreciated in a general exhibition, but this production of the artist, whoever he may be, deserves more attention than it has yet received from the general public. So it's a backhand compliment there, but pretty strange. But it's one of the things that I think is important about Annabelle. It makes him stand out amongst the 19th century painters. This is not how we think of early New Zealand painting. This is not how we think about painting in the 1860s and 1870s in New Zealand. And that gives Joseph Annabelle a chance to stand out in the 21st century, I believe that very strongly. He also represented New Zealand in the Melbourne exhibition of 1882, and there you've got Joseph Annabelle at the top with horse, papa papa, a mare called Kate, we'll show this horse, we'll talk to in a minute, a painting called Fruit, very horse painting, and a portrait of Douglas MacLean. The other artists we don't really know very well, those all fall into obscurity with the exception of Charles Blomfield. And this is a really good example of Blomfield. So that's what New Zealand painting of the 1860s, 1870s is supposed to look like, and that's a very long way from our dropsy of the brain friends. And so Joseph Annabelle is the sort of painter you can connect to because he doesn't fall into the melee of Hoyts and Gullies and Blomfields. You know, he stands out as something special. Hoyt. This is part of this Talman Tasman Smith book that we received a couple of years ago. But again, this is what we think of as being 19th century New Zealand painting. This is a reproduction of the MacLean portrait, which whereabouts is unknown. It is from a famous photograph of MacLean. Portrait painting is one of those areas in which it must be said that Annabelle took something of a gamble. He was a man, as I said, that painted from photographs. He had a close relationship with Samuel Carnell, as Lindell did later on. But he can never have guessed that as New Zealand developed, it would increasingly reject the portrait. Where reputation has been made in New Zealand painting in the 19th century, it's been made by landscape painters. Annabelle's oeuvre of family groups, portraits, horse portraits and still lives are still a fairly sophisticated brew for New Zealanders. Amongst his most famous portraits are the joint matching portraits of Reverend and Mrs. Marshall, and you remember Reverend Marshall's home is on that little list, Lyndon's. And these are excellent examples of Annabelle's skill as a portrait painter. William Marshall was the first schoolmaster in Hawke's Bay, moving here in 1852, so he was a new arrival. Him and Luke Clinton end up being arch enemies, Wiccans together, as they used to in this. In 1855, he founded the Napier Trust School on the corner of Hastings and Tennyson Street. He became its first headmaster, later became the headmaster of Napier Grammar School. What I think is interesting about these two portraits is actually the history of them within the organisation, the Hawke's Bay Museum and Art Gallery. And this is a bit like airing our dirty washing in public, but I'll do it and my staff will slap me later. When Annabelle died in 1893, William Colenso wrote in his diary, "The old pioneer Joseph Annabelle has died. Those are his portraits hanging in the Philosophical Institute of the Reverend and Attitudinous Mrs. Marshall." And I think it's a wonderful description of Mrs. Marshall, looking very attitudinous. So this is a rarity for us. These are two paintings that we still have that we know were hanging in the Napier Athenaeum building in 1893. That's what they look like now. That's what she looked like when I came on board. She had lost her frame and had a few holes poked in it. And that was after 110 years in our care. And this tells you really what the trajectory of fashion around colonial paintings and colonial portraiture has been. And the realisation that we do have the photographs from which these paintings were painted probably made earlier people at the museum think they were inferior works, because as I said, we have a strained relationship in the way we think about painters that use photography. So by the 2000s, they were abandoned, frameless and damaged in the collection store. We began to realise that they were important, and they went for conservation at Auckland Art Gallery, and that's them now. And what people always like to see is those things alongside each other, so you can see what a beautiful job has been done by Mrs. Marshall. And there's the Reverend of Mrs. Marshall, James, our framer, put two and two together and realised two abandoned old picture frames that we were using for mirrors actually were the Marshall's original frames. So they've now been restored, conserved and reunited in their frames. They will be in one of our opening exhibitions and they're really great treasures of the collection. So even though we broke them in the first place, we have, I hope, redeemed ourselves. Portrait painting. These are portraits we're still looking to locate. The Annabelle book tells us they were in family collections in 1982 when we just started the process of tracing those. This is a most unusual portrait of the son, Joseph. What you've got to do is sort of look. These reproductions don't really suggest how wonderful these paintings are going to be when we start to see them. Now this one here is quite a good one to look at. Annabelle has certain interests as a painter and things I think he was very, very proud of. One of those was his ability to spectacles, and the other was his ability to pick jewellery. We also noticed that he's not so good at hands, and so he leaves out a bit of the detail. That's right, at least he doesn't get the number of fingers right. This is his wife, Mary Chambers, and this one is one of the first ones I've located still within the family, so there's the real word. And so that's a good indication of the quality we can expect to see between the old reproduction. There's close-up detail of the brooch that she is wearing, and actually still remains in the family, but also, as you can see, that again, like our own paintings, this is a work that needs some attention, and as I said, he's very proud of his ability to depict spectacles. He's a supremely confident horse painter, and it's probably one of the ways he really made his money. He is a mystery. He really doesn't appear in the newspapers. He doesn't exhibit with exhibiting institutions. But he's working here for 20-something years, so there's got to be a lot of work out there. Now, the Annabelle book concentrates on works that were in the museum at the time and the works that were in the family, and there's got to be more works out there. For example, we don't seem to have a Chambers family portrait. Now, it would seem rather unusual that Joseph Annabelle wasn't painting his family in that extended sense. There's no portrait of William Colenso, which seems unusual, given that there's a famous Lindau portrait of William Colenso, and it was such a small area. Though, as we know, Colenso fell from fashion very much, and maybe he was more a friend of the Marshalls, we don't know. So there's got to be a lot of Annabelle works out there. So this lovely horse painting, one day I would like to do an exhibition on the history of horse painting in Hawke's Bay, because there's been some fantastic people. Gault, who I mentioned before, basically lived in Hastings because he could make money as a horse painter. Another one, this is this lovely combination of the homestead and the horse, and this wonderful sense of scale. This is one that's in our collection that's yet to be restored. It's a small portrait of an unknown subject matter, so I would be very interested if anyone recognises that face as a family member or anybody else. It doesn't relate to any photograph we had, but it's a very fine portrait, quite an early one, I suspect. And that is a self-portrait. And I put that up last because Joseph Annabelle, he does seem to be a very modest creature. If you look, for example, at the self-portraits of people like Lindauer, they do big splashy self-portraits of themselves as artists with brushes and easels and looking very romantic. But Annabelle belongs to an earlier generation. That's just the detail of the matching portrait to his wife's. It's a very sort of modest portrait. There are no surviving photographs I've been able to find yet of Annabelle, but there are some family albums. So, fascinatingly modest, but very, very accomplished character. Joseph Annabelle's bicentenary will be 2015, and we are working towards an exhibition of his works. We're trying to find as many of those as we can. I believe that he is a very important painter that relates very strongly to English and to Australian painting, and I think he's a really good person for us to look at in the way that Hawke's Bay Museum very specialises in bringing people that deserve attention back again. The problem with Annabelle is it is 200 years since he was born. It's more than 100 years since he died, so tracing surviving evidence is a very difficult thing to do. So that's what I said, I wanted to lure some Annabelles into the room, but I also wanted you to perhaps help out and be very aware of where you know of 19th century portraiture and homes and families that either carry the JA or have an obsession with jewellery and spectacles, have large horses and small houses, have dropsy of the brain, and hopefully we can put enough of the Annabelle story together to make the rest of the country realise what an interesting painting is. So thank you very much.
I've got a coloured photograph of a man, something like that last picture.
Right, yeah, well, let's try. See that to me.
Well, it's my fortunate job, so thank you to Douglas for coming along today. I hope everyone's found this as fascinating as I have. We'll all go home and look at everything on the walls. I feel that, you know, I'm the apt person to be here because, of course, I have a dog, and I wish Joseph Annabelle was still around to be my dog. Anyway, Douglas, on behalf of
us. Oh, thank you, Rose.